Welcome to the DevCon Archives, featuring top sessions from the latest DevCon, which took place in Bangkok in November 2024. These episodes spotlight some of the best talks from the largest Ethereum developer conference, showcasing the technical advancements, mission, projects, and novel ideas shaping the Ethereum ecosystem. All talks have been recorded. You can find them on archive.devcon.org. Let's dive into today's featured talk.
Carlos Matallana, work at Polygon, and today I will be talking about the top code offenders in the ZQVM. In order to explain that, basically I will do, at the very beginning, some introductions about what are the ZK counters, what are the types of the ZK counters available, and how many ZK counters do we have available on the ZQVM. The second point will be in the analysis of the offenders. You will see that there are some straightforward offenders on the ZKVM, so there is no correlation between the gas consumed on Ethereum and the ZK counters consumed on the ZKVM. But I will go more into the details. There are some opcodes that are quite straightforward, but when we analyze, in this case, I will analyze a Uniswap swap, we will see which is the worst opcodes that performs very bad in terms of ratio between gas and ZK counters. So for that purpose, I will analyze a Uniswap swap trace. And in the third point, I will basically explain it, what are the next steps, how I would say how we can optimize those opcodes in order to have a better ratio between the gas and the ZK counters wasted. And also I will explain two different approaches about how those opcodes could be priced on the ZKVM. Okay, so let's start. What are the ZK counters? You can imagine the ZK counters, if you can imagine the gas on Ethereum in order to measure some computational cost, execution cost, you can imagine the ZK counters exactly the same as the gas, but on the ZKVM. Okay? Basically, in the ZKVM, we have, in Ethereum, we have a unit, which is a block. In the ZKVM, we have a unit of proving, which is a batch. So there is some relation over there. And another difference between Ethereum and the ZKVM, it's like on Ethereum we have one single dimensional resource, which is the gas, but on the ZKVM side we have the ZK counters and we have multiple of them. Okay, so basically this table summarizes what I have just said. On Ethereum we have a unit, which is a block, the ZKVM is a batch. The batch consumes some gas, it has some limitation on the gas, and the gas basically reflects the computational resources that you are wasting when you execute an opcode. This is a single dimensional gas. On the ZKVM side, we have a batch, which is our unit of proving. We have the ZK counters. We have several of them, so it's kind of multidimensional. And basically, they reflect the proof computational cost. Okay. Well, this is basically a piece of code. This is in ZK assembly. Basically, this is the ZK ROM. We implement the EVM in this ZK assembly language, which implements the EVM in a ZK assembly language. And basically, those are all the ZK counters and all these values. Quite difficult to read it. So in order to understand it better, we have, as I mentioned, in the ZKVM, we have a unit, which is the batch. And this batch has several ZK counters. What are those ZK counters? Basically, we have the steps. You can imagine the steps. Sometime I have heard about you can change the word, and instead of saying steps, you can say kind of cycles. We have the arithmetic state machine in order to do multiplications. And, well, also we use the state machine in order to prove divisions by doing multiplications. We have the binary state machine in order to do additions, subtractions, and bitwise operations, basically. We have the memory-aligned state machine. Basically, when you read a slot in the ZKVM, two different slots, and you want to join all the bytes together, we use that state machine. We have the KeyCack state machine, which is obvious, in order to do KeyCack hashing. We have the padding Poseidon state machine and the Poseidon state machine. Again, quite straightforward to do Poseidon hashing. And when we want to do a linear Poseidon, which is a concatenation of Poseidons in order to hash a long array of bytes, we need to use the padding Poseidon state machine. And the very last one is the SHA-256 state machine, which also do hashing of course. So it is very important to say that each state machine has its own capacity. So as you may see on this slide, we have a lot of steps because I would say the computational cost of our step is quite low. It's just one, I would say, one hit, one row when we go through the program, through the GKVM ROM. But for example, on the KICAC, you can see that there are way less resources over there. Why is that? Because basically it's more complex. So it uses more resources. So it has less capacity, basically. One thing that is very important also to mention is that none in a batch, we have all those ZK resources. None of those ZK resources can be overflow. If any of those ZK resources is overflowed, it means that the proof could not be generated, basically. The prover could not generate that proof. So we need to be very aware of that. Okay, so let's do some kind of analysis on the, I would say, top code offenders on the ZKVM. And as I mentioned, there are super straightforward opcodes that consumes ZK counters very directly, and clearly there are offenders on the ZKVM. What I mean, when I say offenders, it means that those opcodes consumes some gas, and this gas is basically not reflected on the ZK counters that they consume. So there is a misalignment over there. The most straightforward one, and of course you may heard about in every ZKVM, if you do a loop of KICACs, then you are wasting a lot of ZK resources, but you pay quite cheap gas. So for example, the first code is the KICAC. The second code is the code copy and call data copy. In this case, I would say that all opcodes that has some kind of dynamic gas pricing, given that given the memory expansion, we need to do some computations on the ZKVM. That of course it costs some arithmetizations, binary, and steps. And also, when we do some kind of copy region between contexts, one context to another context, it will basically waste a lot of steps as well. The third one, also, I think it's very clear, the example, it's the external code copy opcode. In this case, we are just, I mean, this opcode basically just copy some bytes of a bytecode into a memory region. Okay, that's it. What you need to do inside the ZKVM? You need to provide the full bytecode. You need to hash it with the linear Poseidon. You need to check that that hash matches the one that you need to read on the state tree. So now you know that the full bytecode is correct. And you need to go to the exactly byte or number of bytes that you want to copy into your memory region, take that byte and then copy to the memory region. So there is a lot of things to do on the ZKVM, but the cost of this code is not that much. And of course, a clear offenders are the precompiled smart contracts. You know, there are specific functions on Ethereum, like issue recover, pairings, modular exponentiation, and so on. And there is a very huge misalignment between the precompiled smart contract gas pricing and the ZK counter resourcing consuming the ZKVM. Okay, those opcodes, I would say that are very clear, that are offenders, but I wanted to analyze deeper, not the clear opcodes, but the standard opcodes, standard transactions on the EVM. In this case, basically, here, this table, well, before going to the table, all these numbers belong, I mean, there are some assumptions. The first assumption is that here, I'm showing data of one batch that has only one block, and this block has N transactions, okay? And these transactions are always the same type. So you can imagine a block in the ZKVM with just Ether transfers, with just ERC20 token transfers, and just with Uniswap swaps. So let's go for the first one, the Ethereum transfer. We can fill up to 2,000, more or less 2,000 transactions inside a batch. And we can see that the top ZK counter, the more limiting ZK counter, is the arithmetic. Why? Because we are basically checking the signature inside the CKVM. So we are doing a lot of asset recover. The asset recover uses a lot of arithmetic state machines. If we go to the next two ones, the ERC20 token and the Uniswap swap, what we can see is that, okay, we can fit less transactions because you have some execution to do. And we can see that the top opcode ZK counter-offender are basically the steps. Either in the ERC20 token and the Uniswap swap. Regarding the Uniswap swap, it gets even worse. I mean, you hit the top, the limit of steps, and the other state machines remain at half capacity, even less. Given those numbers, we're going to get into the details of what are the opcodes in a Uniswap swap trace that consumes more steps. Okay, so yes, what are the opcodes that consume more states in a Uniswap swap? So, in a Uniswap, if you analyze a trace of the Uniswap swap, you will find that push 1, push 2, mstore, pop, and push 20 are the most used opcodes. If you join all the steps consumed by all the appearance of that opcodes on the book trace, you will find that the push 1 opcode will weigh around 12,000 steps. And it appears in the Uniswap swap, it appears 658 times. So same for push 2, mstore, pop, and push 30. So basically, these opcodes are the ones that consumes the most steps on a Uniswap swap. But let's go again into the details. Inside these opcodes, is the user paying the correct gas price? I mean, is the user paying the correct gas price in order because the opcode is consuming 12,000 steps? So here's the question, yes or no? So let's go to analyze a little bit. And here, basically, what I did here is comparing the gas of an opcode versus the steps that opcode consumed on the ZKVM. So basically, we can get some kind of a ratio between gas and steps. Here we can say that, by far, the worst opcode is the code copy, because it costs just 15 gas and consumes 1,000 steps. So the ratio is, I would say, quite bad. The second one is the mstore. Here I highlight it in green because it also it's one of the opcodes that has more appearance also on a Uniswap swap trace. So clearly, if we want to increase the efficiency of a batch in the ZKVM, clearly we need to optimize. We need to get better ratio in the mstore, for example, opcode. Third one is the call data copy, then push 32, and then call data load. If we want to get rid of those top opcode offenders, what we should do is repricing them or optimize them in order to get a better ratio, basically. On the other side, what are the best opcodes? What are the ones that basically the user is paying, I would say, fairly about the ZK counters that it consumes on the ZKVM? So here we have, for example, the one, jump conditional, external code size, or log3. Of course, log3, sstore, and this kind of opcodes, the ratio is very, 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 very low because basically you are paying that you are storing some data on the receipt tree or on the state tree. Okay, so now the question is how to price those opcodes accordingly to the ZK counters that they are consuming, basically. Okay, and the most straightforward approach, which is the one that we are following right now, is an static approach. You can see from you can imagine the batch as a monolithic batch. We have all the resources available, and think that regardless of the transactions that are executed on that batch has a price. That's it. In this case, $0.01. So the sequencer basically pays for the batches that it posts to layer one, and the verifier, when the verifier verifies those batches that are posted in the layer one, it receives the fees. That's it. Super simple. So the user we would say that the user does not care about that, only the sequencer. And of course, this price is split among all the transactions in a batch. But then we can use the next iteration, I would say, we can use kind of a dynamic approach. The dynamic approach is very similar to the gas limit on Ethereum. So imagine that we introduce here a new concept, which is kind of the ZK gas and ZK gas limit. So the sequencer does not pay for a full batch, but the batch is dynamic. So it means that basically the prover can decide the amount of the state machines that it needs to prove, basically. We can achieve that via the bat cops. And basically here the sequencer just sets a ZK gas limit, very similar to the gas limit, which is the ZK gas that the sequencer is willing to pay for a batch. And then when the verifier verifies the proof, it's subtracting gas for the gas limit. And if it runs out, it will be kind of an out of gas, but out of gas limit. So the batch is kind of invalid. Then the next step is, okay, let's analyze properly in the language, in the compiler, why those opcodes are performing so bad. And let's try to optimize them. Let's try to iterate, let's try to add more instructions in order for those opcodes to have a better ratio. Let's try to improve the constraints, the pill, in order for those opcodes to have a better ratio and not to be offenders on the ZKVM. If you want to know more about that, tomorrow we will do a workshop at 3 p.m. on Classroom C. It is called Optimize ZKVM Throughput Series 2. We did one on Brussels, which won the Series 1. There was a lot of people over there. So we're going to explain some optimizations that we did on the ZK assembly side and on the compiler in order to optimize those top opcode offenders. Okay, thank you.
Amazing. Great talk, Carlos. Muchas gracias. All right. So remember, you can post your questions on the QR code. We're going to start to hit the first one, the top one. What happens if the sequencer has a bug and it creates a batch that overflows the counters and then it gets committed to Ethereum?
Yes, inside the... Good question. Inside the ROM, it can happen two things. So inside the ROM, if the sequencer has a bug and commits a batch that overflows the counter, we have a program, as I mentioned, which is the ROM, which is an EVM implementation. But inside the ZKVM ROM, we control the counters that are wasted. If you overflow the counters, then the prover can prove the batch, but it's an invalid batch. I want to say invalid batch, it means that the old state root is equal to the new state root. So there is no state transition function over there. The issue is when you have a bug in the sequencer and in the ROM, then you end up in a situation when you cannot prove the batch.
Amazing, thanks. The next one is, how much does EOF help eliminate or reduce the top offender opcodes?
Just read once this EIP. I would say that we need to analyze deeper what will be the top of offenders given the change of the bytecode and EOF, basically. Yep. It's very difficult to answer.
I agree. It's common, but it just requires a little work and research. Do you still need counters if your proving system supports continuations?
You need counters, but I would say that those counters will not overflow since you can continue the proving execution into another batch. So this will mean that basically any Ethereum transaction will be provable. But still, if you are just doing a loop of keycaps, imagine that you're doing a very large loop of keycaps and it consumes 7 batches. That Ethereum transaction needs to pay the 7 batches. So we need to be aware on the proving system that it's computing 7 batches. I mean, thanks to the continuation, we will be able to prove it. You need to pay for it.
Yep, makes sense. So next is around gas costs. Would multidimensional EIP 1559 be useful?
I would say I was in some meetings discussing about this multidimensional gas pricing, and it could be done, but it's not easy to modify the whole, I mean, adding kind of a new transactions with new fields in order to sign this gas that it does not reflect the computation, which is the gas, but gas layer 2, or ZK gas, whatever you want to call it, that basically reflects the ZK counters or proving computation. You need to change libraries, you need to change UX, UI, MetaMask. This is not easy to achieve.
A lot of work.
A lot of work.
All right. How do opcodes limit work with forced transactions, and would it be valid reason to exclude transactions?
I mean, forced transactions at the very beginning is just regular transactions, but you just bypass the sequencer, and it works exactly the same that a standard transaction. If a forced transaction overflows the batch, which can be, then, as I mentioned before in the first question, the batch will be invalid, and that's it. So at the very end, you are kind of, you want to force your transactions, but you are not achieving to execute your transactions because the batch is invalid. So, and every time, of course, that a user posts a forced transaction into layer one, the user needs to pay for it because you are bypassing the sequencer.
Right, right. The next one is, are there any steps that smart contract developers can already take now to reduce the usage of those offending opcodes?
I would, it's very difficult. You would need to go into assembly code. Otherwise, Solidity just put the opcodes most beneficial for execution, not to take in account the proving system. So I would say it's very difficult.
Yeah, I guess it would require like, yeah, architecting the compilers and doing a whole bunch of like changes and then.
Yes, again, yeah.
Yeah, really deep knowledge of that. Are there any, this is the last one, are there any concerns with the resulting divergence with L1 fees in terms of user experience?
I mean, we are achieving a stage, luckily, that the difference, I mean, these proving costs are every time that are cheaper, 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 and cheaper. So I would not expect a lot of divergence between layer one fees. But still, the ZKVM has some mechanisms in order to port layer one fees into layer two, which is the EIP 1559 in the base fee, so it can reflect the data availability cost on layer one. So, yeah, this is just a technique, but there are several ones.
Yeah, but I guess like there's a lot of improvements still in the backlog to keep improving layer twos instead of like, yeah. A lot of work. And I think with that, we complete all the questions. Thank you so much, Carlos.
Thank you.
It's been a pleasure.
Thank you for listening. Be sure to visit archive.devcon.org to watch and listen to all the other DevCon talks. We look forward to seeing you next time.